Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Losing Earth, A Recent History by Nathaniel Rich revisits a crucial decade, roughly 1979 to 1989, when scientific warnings about climate change were clear and political opportunities for action briefly aligned. Expanding on Rich's widely discussed magazine reporting, the book reconstructs how researchers, policymakers, energy interests, and environmental advocates interacted as the scale of the problem came into focus. Rather than presenting climate change as an abstract, distant threat, it treats it as a story shaped by real people, institutions, and decisions made under pressure, uncertainty, and competing incentives. The narrative approach emphasizes turning points, missteps, and the fragility of consensus, showing how quickly momentum can be gained and lost. In doing so, the book offers a sobering perspective on why meaningful national and international responses did not arrive earlier, and how the past continues to influence today's climate debates, strategies, and frustrations. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the 1980s as the decisive window for climate action. A central idea of the book is that the 1980s were not a prelude to the real climate story, but a moment when the outline of the crisis was already visible and solutions were politically imaginable. Scientific findings had matured beyond early hypotheses into increasingly confident assessments, and the issue began moving from academic journals into hearings, agencies, and news coverage. Rich frames this period as a time when the future was not yet locked in, and when a blend of public concern, bipartisan possibilities, and international cooperation seemed within reach. The decade also reveals how policy windows depend on timing the right messengers, the right institutional channels, and a sense of urgency that can translate into law. By focusing on this specific era, the book encourages readers to rethink the common belief that society only recently became aware of climate risks. It also highlights how early recognition does not automatically produce early action. Competing priorities, economic anxieties, and ideological shifts can close a window quickly. The takeaway is that climate history is not only about data and emissions, but about moments when human systems briefly become flexible enough to change direction. And what happens when that flexibility vanishes? Secondly, science communication and the challenge of translating certainty into policy, the book explores how scientific understanding, even when strong, must pass through messy layers of communication before it becomes policy. Researchers do not only produce findings, they must decide how to express risk, confidence, and urgency to audiences that often want simple answers. Rich emphasizes the tension between scientific caution and political demand for clarity. Too much hedging can be used to justify delay, while too much certainty can invite backlash if predictions are framed poorly. The narrative also shows the importance of intermediaries, agency leaders, science advisors, and advocates who can carry complex information into legislative and diplomatic settings. In the 1980s, climate change increasingly became legible to non-specialists, but legibility did not guarantee consensus. Opponents could amplify uncertainty, dispute models, or shift the conversation toward costs and competitiveness. Supporters had to make the issue concrete, linking it to health, agriculture, security, and long-term economic stability. This topic underscores that climate politics is partly an argument about knowledge itself, which institutions are trusted, which experts are heard, and how doubt is manufactured or magnified. The book invites readers to see communication not as a secondary detail, but as a deciding factor in whether science becomes action. Thirdly, politics, ideology, and the erosion of bipartisan possibility. Rich's account highlights how climate action depended on political conditions that were unstable and easily reversed. Early on, there were signs that a broad coalition might form, including moderates who could accept market-compatible regulation and international agreements. Over time, however, ideological polarization hardened, turning environmental policy into a proxy battle over the role of government, regulation, and national identity. The book presents this shift not as inevitable, but as the result of strategic choices, shifting party incentives, and the broader political mood of the late Cold War era. Climate policy became entangled with debates about economic growth, energy independence, and the perceived threat of international constraints. As the consensus weakened, the political cost of supporting strong action increased, and delay became the safer option for many officials. This topic also illustrates how negotiations can falter when participants treat compromise as weakness, or when short-term electoral pressures outweigh long-term risk. Rich encourages readers to pay attention to process committee dynamics, executive branch priorities, and the role of high-profile moments that can accelerate or derail progress. The lesson is that climate outcomes are not only shaped by what is scientifically true, but by what is politically possible, and political possibility can shrink rapidly. Fourthly, industry influence, lobbying, and the strategic use of uncertainty. Another important theme is the role of industry interests in shaping the boundaries of debate. The book examines how energy companies and allied groups could respond to climate warnings by advocating delay, emphasizing uncertainty, and protecting business models tied to fossil fuels. This influence did not always require direct denial of climate science. It could work through subtler methods such as pushing for more study, reframing the issue as premature, or highlighting the economic costs of regulation. Rick's narrative shows how lobbying, messaging, and institutional access can slow policy, even when the basic science is not in serious dispute among experts. It also reveals a recurring pattern in environmental conflicts when proposed solutions threaten existing revenue streams. Affected industries often invest heavily in shaping public perception and the regulatory environment. The result is an asymmetric contest in which advocates for action must build broad public urgency, while opponents can often win by keeping the issue complicated and contested. This topic matters because it connects past tactics to present day debates about energy transition, carbon pricing, and corporate responsibility. Readers come away with a clearer picture of how power operates in climate politics and why structural incentives can overpower moral arguments unless policy design anticipates resistance. Lastly, lessons for today's climate era: urgency, realism, and accountability. The final major topic is what the 1979 to 1999 story teaches modern readers about building effective climate action now. Rich suggests that understanding past near misses can sharpen present strategy. One lesson is that awareness alone is not enough. Movements and leaders must translate awareness into durable institutions, enforceable rules, and economic pathways that survive election cycles. Another lesson is that climate action requires both urgency and realism, ambitious goals paired with practical mechanisms that distribute costs fairly and reward innovation. The book also raises questions about accountability. If the science was understood decades ago, then responsibility is not only collective and abstract, it is connected to identifiable decisions, delays, and campaigns that shaped outcomes. At the same time, the narrative warns against simplistic blame that ignores how complex systems behave. Success depends on coalition building across sectors, including labor, business, local communities, and international partners, and on designing policies that can scale. By treating climate change as recent history rather than distant prophecy, the book encourages a shift in mindset. The future is still contingent, but only if societies act faster than institutions naturally prefer. The topic leaves readers with a more grounded sense of what must change, how quickly it must happen, and why political storytelling remains a critical tool. In conclusion, this book is best for readers who want to understand climate change as a political and human drama, not only as a scientific or technological challenge. Journalists, policy students, climate advocates, and any concerned citizen who feels confused by decades of delay will gain clarity from its focus on a specific, pivotal period. It can benefit a reader's life by replacing vague frustration with a sharper sense of how institutions make decisions, how narratives shape outcomes, and where leverage points exist for meaningful change. By seeing how quickly progress can unravel, readers are encouraged to value persistence, coalition building, and policy durability rather than one-time breakthroughs. Compared with many climate books that emphasize future scenarios or technical solutions, Losing Earth stands out for its storytelling and historical reconstruction. It helps readers understand why rational arguments did not automatically win, and why timing, messaging, and power matter as much as evidence. That perspective makes the book worth buying alongside more science-heavy titles, because it fills a different gap, the emotional and strategic understanding of how we got here. For anyone trying to engage effectively with climate issues today, that historical insight is both sobering and practical. If you would like to support Nathaniel Rich, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.